Yeah, it is good. It is good to be in church, good to be saved. And I'm telling you, the preaching I've heard has been just tremendous. Brother Jones is right. We've known each other for quite a few years, but it's been quite a few years since we preached together. And he's right. He said when people first hear him, they don't like him. And everybody say it goes downhill from there or something like that. When I heard him, I didn't like him. I just didn't like him. It's easy. But I like him. I like him. You say, what happened? I listened to what he was saying. And what he is saying needs to be said and needs to be acted upon. All right? All right, now look, let me explain this. I operate like on the edge, not of sanity, but I just keep I sleep with a brick on the gas pedal. That's just what I do. In fact, this really happened. I'm working on a book, and I worked on it in my sleep. I was confronted with a problem, and had some translation work, and I was stumped, and I had to get this through to continue with this book, and so I finally went to bed, and I went to sleep, and while I was asleep, I dreamed the answer. And woke up and wrote it down and then checked with somebody that would know and found out I was right. So I work, I push. And last night I went to bed and slept about an hour. And after an hour, I woke up. Doesn't matter why, I just woke up. And I knew I was not going to be going back to sleep. That's all there was to it. So I laid around for another half an hour trying to convince myself I was wrong. I proved myself I was right. And I don't like to waste time. Oh, this is a horrible button. This is a horrible button. It is the size of a stop sign. Man. Boy, you didn't want that. That would have come off. It would have got somebody in the eye, I'm telling you. And so if I'm going to be up at night, and sometimes it's the devil. You ever have trouble? You think the devil's got to keep you up at night? Make him regret it. Make him regret it. So I knew today I was going to try to sleep. So I read 30 pages a day. So I got my Bible reading done. And then, and I've said this before, it's very embarrassing to read the Bible over and over and over again. And then one day read a verse for the first time. Last night, about 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, I read a verse that I probably read well over 250 some times. But last night I read it for the first time. You say, what did that mean? That meant 2 pages of notes and an entire outline of the book of Isaiah. So that's what it did until 4 o'clock. And then I climbed in bed, and I was still up, and I was happy, tired, happy. And then I realized, you know something? I got my Bible reading done, and I got tonight's message done. And then I thought, you know, but I haven't worshiped the Lord. And so I slipped out of the bed as quietly as I could. Fortunately, the snoring of my wife kept her from hearing anything. And I just got down on my hands and knees and just praised the God. Boy, I praised the God of the Bible, the God of Israel. And don't we have the right God? You know, if you are up at night and you just say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to call God every good name I can. Think about that. You've got some night, you know how you get, you can't sleep. You try to sleep. Then you get mad because you can't sleep. Now you're cooked, right? Then get up and just call God every good thing you can. Praise Him, worship Him, glorify Him. You know what I want? I want to be able to pillow my head at night and have the devil sneak up beside me and go, I want him to want me to sleep. Now, we are going to go through the book of Isaiah. It's kind of a casual outline. It's not a real deep one. But we're going to go through the book of Isaiah with a detour into 2 Chronicles. And some of my messages are long. This one isn't. Some of my messages, my introduction is about 20 minutes, and the message is about an hour, hour and a half. And I got a feeling this message may be only about 15, 20 minutes. But the introduction is going to be about an hour. Just is. I mean, how do you do Isaiah briefly? So open your Bibles to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 1, I'm telling you guys, I just love the Lord. Isn't it good to be saved? Isn't it good to be associated with this God? With this one? You know, one of the things I try to get across to people, you know what is different about our God and all other gods? There's one difference, one major difference. All of the gods of the heathen are angry. You check out any religion and their God has to be appeased and he's angry. That bozo Allah is a murderer and he's angry. And you know, you got the heathen where the river god was angry, so it overflowed its banks, and the rain god is angry, so we didn't get any rain, and the volcano god is angry, throw in two virgins, call me in the morning. And when I was a Roman Catholic, you know what they told us? Jesus Christ is so angry with you because of your sin, you can't even speak to him. You have to talk to his mother, she'll carry it. You remember that? You say, why? Because all of the gods of the heathen are angry. You know what our God is? Gracious. Merciful. Of great kindness. Slow to anger. Oh, man. Slow to anger. You know how I know he's slow to anger? Because we're still here. And so I am just rejoicing in being associated with this God. Now, again, I was working on this just before the service, putting this together because I did try to get a little sleep this afternoon. But, so again, we're just going to just kind of walk through this as best I can, and you just grab something. I hope something that'll be a help to you. First thing I want you to think about, I use an old Scofield Bible, and in the top of the center column is a date, and those are, dates by Archbishop Usher. I pretty much believe them. And if you look at the first date, it's 760 BC, and this book closes 698 BC. This book encompasses 62 years in time, right? What does that mean? So you don't think, do you? That means that Isaiah grows older by how many years? From the beginning of this book to the end, 62 years. So when this book begins, I don't know, we don't know how old he is. I don't think he's going to be any younger than 20, because God doesn't recognize a man in Israel till he's 20. I highly doubt he's going to send a prophet out at 19. I'm not sure a 20-year-old prophet's going to get a big audience, okay? So if he's 20 in Isaiah chapter 1, he is 82 years old when this book closes. If he was 24 when this book opens, he's 86 years old when this book closes. And I'm going to have to start somewhere, so I'm just going to bow and talk to the author, and then see if I can get this in some semblance of order. Father, it is just good to be saved, and we are saved because of you, and God, we are kept because of you. And many times when we say we're glad we're saved, what we really mean is we're glad we're still saved. God, I am glad tonight that I am still saved. So, Father, you know. I don't want to be a problem. I don't want to get in the way of the message. I don't want my clouded head to be a hindrance to you or an obstacle. So get out of your way and out of the way of these people, Father, and please accomplish something, convey the message, convey the long introduction and then the message. And I hope, Father, that you get something, and maybe Canada will too. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. Now I will preface this message by saying this. I'm not one of those people that excludes people from a message as a rule, but some messages are exclusive. Brother Jones' message on how to be a good husband would have been worthless to a bunch of women. I didn't hear what his wife said to the ladies, but it would have been worthless to a bunch of men. You know, let's hope. Okay. This really is going to weigh heavily on, I'd say, anybody in here between 17 and 30. That's who I want you to just really pay some attention. Because, see, that's somewhere where this guy was. He was between 20 and 30 years old when this thing began. You know, 24, 25, who knows. And I think you guys are tomorrow. I really do. And I know I said this probably here one other time, but I'm not just pumping this. I really believe it. Back in, Brother Jones and I, we come from the same spiritual generation. Granted, he is about 70 years older than me, but we come from the same spiritual generation. And that was the 70s. And though the 70s were really a weird generation in the world, boy, in Christianity, there was something going on. And God, you will go across America and you'll find people that God touched during that generation, those 70s, that God was doing something in our country during that time. And there is still an overshadowing and a lingering, if nothing else, just the final taste and a hunger for what was there in the 70s. And I came out of a church that had 5,000 people in it, got saved. The college and career class, 20 to 30, about that age, that I went in, that Kathy and I met in, was about 425 20 to 30 year olds. And I've often said it this way, we called ourselves headhunters. If you weren't dead more than 3 days, we led you to the Lord. I mean, we were out winning people, confronting everything. If somebody would have showed us how to do it, we'd have gone to hell and strangled the devil to death personally just because we had the zeal to do it. And I won't discuss now who threw the bucket of cold water on that generation, but some of those guys are really not doing a lot anymore. And they got misdirected. They got sent off at a tangent. And expended their energy for just really no good purpose. And I'm telling you, I have not seen that excitement in a generation of 20 to 30-year-olds in the last 37 years that I've been saved until now. And in my country, I see that between 20 and 30, I just call them, they're just nuts for God. They're just a little bit for God. And that's what you need. That's just what you need. You just need somebody that you don't need to, you know, I worry about, well, I just think that guy, he's 20 years old and he's got all his ducks in a row. I'm worried about that guy. Some of his ducks are going to get away. You know what you need? You need somebody you're just a little bit afraid of. I'm going to go serve God. Okay. Over there. Please. Over there. Anyway. I was preaching down in Australia. You know what I see? I see that 20 to 30-year-old bunch of nutcases. They're just a bunch of nutcases for God. I'm in New Zealand. And New Zealanders, you know, I think, you know, they're always kind of just a little bit subtle or a little bit low-key. But I see that 20 to 30-year-old age just excited. And I see it in you. I see it in these guys here. These four guys, did they left these four guys here? Do you guys know them? You know what I saw in those four guys? If I could say one word, it was a hunger. There was just a hunger. They kind of had this inside. I don't know how they looked outside, but inside, here's what I saw. You know? And they were looking for something from the Bible and looking for something from God. And they're just walking around going, yeah, there's something here. I want to find out what it was. And I like that. I like that. I wish I'd got a chance to say goodbye to them. If you guys see them, tell them I said goodbye to them. Tell them I stole the other guy's watch, too. They're looking for it. But and so, now, here's what I want you to see. And so we're going to go through this, and honestly, the introduction is an outline of Isaiah, and over into 2 Chronicles, and then, I'll try to get the message across. What I want you to notice the first thing, look at the first five chapters, just briefly, just go over it, and what you'll find in these five chapters is you'll find that the first thing, they all take place in the same year. They all take place in a year's time. And when you read the first five chapters of Isaiah, you know what you see? You start off seeing Israel's in trouble. As Isaiah the book opens, as the ministry of Isaiah the prophet begins, Israel's best years are behind her. The great kings, the great ones, David, the great ones, Solomon, the great kings are behind them. And Israel's history is a lot of here's what we used to do. Could I give you a little lesson in semantics? If you ever hear the news media talk about somebody having a proud heritage, you know what that means? That means that today they are absolutely worthless. They have nothing to offer anybody. And since they have absolutely nothing to offer anybody, the news media conjures up something in the past that didn't exist.
And they go, you have a proud heritage.
Well, hey, Bucko, who cares about your proud heritage? What about last week? We don't care about 50 years ago, 100 years ago. What happened last week? What did you do great last week?
Don't sit there and go, well, we used to be a great people.
What do you mean you used to be a great people? Oh, yeah, and you're going to blame somebody, right? So here is Israel, and Israel's best days are behind them. And here's what happened last night. My reading was through Isaiah. And this is the verse, and I don't know how many times, guys, I've read this verse, but last night I read it for the first time. Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 1. And listen, when I read this verse last night, it was like the lights went on. That's exactly what happened. I mean, it was like, you know, you're in a dark room and you're reading under a spotlight. And when I read verse 6, it was like, boom, the sun came out. And I began to see some things in the book of Isaiah, which I jotted down. And I'm going to give you, look what it says. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. And I've always been impressed with what takes place next. And we will get to what takes place next. And I've always been so impressed with what takes place next, I miss what I just read. It said what? In the year that King Uzziah died. You know, I'm sorry, but you know, there's not a real good time for people to die. I know there's some wicked people, but... You know, when I read that last night and it said, in the year that King Uzziah died, I thought, whoa, if King Uzziah died, there had to be some grieving being done. You see, King Uzziah, again, was one of the last great kings. Keep your place here and go with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 26. We'll be back to Isaiah, but go to 2 Chronicles chapter 26. And to be very honest, this becomes a sermon unto itself, which I promise not to preach. But here's what I want you to notice about, in just one chapter, look at what we find out about this King Uzziah. Verse 1, then all the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in the room of his father Amaziah. All right, first thing you find out is he is one of Judah's youngest kings. There have maybe been one that started out around 8 years old. But let's face it. Hey, guys, if you're 16, how would you like your own country to play with? Right? I mean, 16 years old, and what do you get for your 16th birthday? A country. I want to play army big time. He was one of Israel's youngest kings. Look at verse 3. 16 years old was Uzziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. Then here's what else you find out. He was one of Israel's longest reigning kings. My Bible helped me with a national tragedy that we experienced in our country a few years ago. No, not that one. I'm not talking about the towers. I'm talking about 1980 when 92, whenever the bozo got in there, Bill Clinton became our president. And I say became, I'm not sure he ever got voted in, but we were all going, oh no, you know, we got Bill Clinton, what are we going to do? And I tried to start pulling my hair out, and I stopped right there real quick. I said, I think I better kick something because I'm not going to start pulling hair out. And I thought, how is America going to live through 8 years of Bill Clinton? And that's all our guys can have. And I'm reading my Bible. You know what I read? I read about Manasseh reigned 55 years over Judah. He was the most wicked king they ever had. He dies. His son takes over. He's wicked too. He makes it for 2 years. And right after him comes one of the best they ever had. And I thought, you know something? Israel survived 55 years of the worst king they ever had. If they can survive 55 years, we can get through 8. We did. And I know, you know, this next year we may get his wife. Brother, I'm telling you what, man. You talk about, you said look up mess in the dictionary, you'll find your picture. Look up ugly, you'll find hers. And you say, well, oh, what are you going to do? You know what I know? I know that if Israel can put up with 55 years of a bad king, we can put up with 8 years of a bad leader. I don't know how your leader is. I don't know if you consider him good or bad, but I'm telling you, whenever somebody gets in a position of leadership that we don't want there, we think, this is the end, this is the end. It's not the end. But here this guy was. He was one of the longest reigning kings. Look at verse 4. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah did. And he sought God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding in the visions of God. And as long as he sought the Lord, God made him to prosper. So in those two verses, we find out he was one of the best kings. throughout, whenever the Bible talks about the kings of Israel, it talks about... it'll talk about him, and almost immediately, Israel or Judah, immediately it'll say, he did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, or he did that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord. Starts right out and lets you know. Right out of the gate, you find out. Now get this. You know, we just found out this guy started at age 16, reigned for 52 years, and he was good. Would you like him? I would. Man, I'll tell you what, I'd be glad to have him. In verse 6 through 8, it said he went forth and warred against the Philistines and broke down the wall of Gath and the wall of Jabneh and the wall of Ashdod and built cities around Ashdod and among the Philistines. And God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians. Boy, that'll warm your heart. that dwelt in Jerubbaal and Mahunams and goes down through. But here's what you find. You find that he was one of the most blessed kings of Judah. In other words, this guy wasn't just good, but God was actively good in his reign and on his behalf, correct? All right, tell me, is that not what you want for your Canadian leader? Do you not want God? You don't just want a good leader. Wouldn't you like to have God say amen to what he does? Wouldn't you like to see God bless his efforts? And so this guy was one of the most blessed. When you start around verse 7, and where I just was at, and you go down through there to verse 10 and 11. Look at 11. Moreover, Uzziah had an host of fighting men that went out to war by bands according to the number of their account. And you read here, this guy had, he was one of the mightiest kings that Judah had. He had a tough army. He had special forces. This guy, you know what he was doing? You know what the Jews were saying? They're saying, oh man, it's like bringing back the glory days. Some of them old Jews, you know what they were saying? Now, hey, wait a minute. He's there 52 years, correct? He dies in chapter 6 of Isaiah after Isaiah's been around for 1 year. Isaiah's about 20. Isaiah's only seen about the last 20 years of this guy's life. But there's some old guys out there, and they've been telling Isaiah, oh man, this is what it used to be like years ago. Oh yeah, this is when our country was great. And look, man, we finally got those Philistines in place and we've beaten the Arabians and God is, we've got a great king and God is blessing our king. He is one of very few kings that was a genius king. I can only think of about one other king in the history of Israel that was a genius, and that was David. David was a genius. David invented musical instruments. I mean, that takes something, okay? You give me a piece of cellophane, I've got the comb, I can try something. But David, I believe he was a genius king. But look what it says here about Uzziah. Verse 15. And he made in Jerusalem engines invented by cunning men to be on the towers and upon the bulwarks to shoot arrows and great stones withal. And his name spread abroad, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. Now, I got to show you this because if I skip over it, somebody's going to come and go, you didn't talk about that. And so, because we're Baptists and we want to know the garbage, it says this in verse 16. And there is something to be noted in verse 16 where it says, but when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. You know when you're in most danger when you think you're in least danger? As soon as you say, I have made it, I can only find three people, there might be a fourth, but I can find three individuals where it says their heart was lifted up. It was him, it was Hezekiah after he was delivered from death, and Lucifer in Ezekiel chapter 28. All three of them were at their peak. All three of them were at their pinnacle. So reach for the top, but if you should get there, don't go, that's where you may be in danger.
Oh, look what I've done.
Yeah, that's nothing compared to what you're about to do. And so here's what happens. His heart was lifted up to destruction, for he transgressed against the Lord his God and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. Now, wait a second. Did he steal some guy's wife and kill the guy and marry her? I mean, I know he didn't belong in the temple. He wasn't supposed to be offering incense. But, you know, he was in the right place. Oh, I'm not justifying him. I'm just saying. But see, he started saying, well, hey, I can do that. Well, he went in there. Verse 17, and Azariah, the priest, went in after him. And you preachers, you Canadian preachers, look, I'm sorry, guys, but if it means jail or whatever, inside here, this is your ground. You better get that down. I had a guy I went to Bible college with, sharpest guy, graduated. He was the sharpest guy in our class. He called me, talked to me for 2 hours and 45 minutes when I was pastoring about 25 years ago. Talked to me for two hours and 45 minutes on why I should not pay taxes. And he says, well, you know, is your church incorporated? I said, yes. He goes, well, you know, you are a branch of the government. I said, well, don't tell them, because they don't know. And I said, if the government comes to my church tomorrow and says, we are going to have churches start paying taxes, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pay taxes as a church. But I said, if the government comes in tomorrow and says, here's what you're allowed to say from the pulpit, there's going to be blood on the wall. If they want to pick my pocket, you know what I'm not going to fight the government over? I'm not going to fight the government over a buck, but I'm going to fight them over a word. And this was a mighty king, but when he stepped into that temple, Azariah said, hey, that's a king. I don't care who he is. He doesn't belong in there. And he went after the government. Would you take a lesson? Notice Azariah, you know, now see, you can tell Azariah was not a Baptist. Had he been a Baptist, when he saw Uzziah go in there, he would have sent letters all over Judah saying, come on, let's join hands, let's show our unity, shut up and just go do the job. And Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him 80 priests of the Lord that were valiant men. They were there. They were there. He didn't go gather them up around the country. It happened, and he just said, okay, guys, let's go. And they withstood Uzziah, the king, and said unto him, it appertaineth not to thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto the Lord, but to the priests, the sons of Aaron, that are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast trespassed, neither shall it be for thine honor from the Lord God. And Uzziah was wroth, and had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was wroth with the priest, the leprosy even rose up in his forehead before the priest in the house of the Lord, from beside the incense altar. Alright, so here's what happens. He goes in there, he's got the incense thing, he's gonna start offering incense. Azariah walks in there and says, I don't care if you're the king. Outside this building, I bow to you, but this is my place. You get out of here, you don't belong here. And he says, don't you talk to me. Then, whoa, man. And he got leprosy. Now, you know what our problem is? And this is because of movies, and this is because of the news media. We define men by their worst act. You'll hear about some businessman, and he will make one deal that may well be not completely honest. This guy, he may well have been a good father. He may well have been a good husband. He may well have been a hero in the military. He might have done every good thing he can, but they'll find this one act because they want to assassinate him, and they'll trump that up. And then us who demand perfection from the imperfect will crucify him right along with the rest of the public. Okay, I'm not going to tell you Uzziah did right. He did wrong. That's the only wrong thing he did that's recorded in the Bible. And he did wrong. But it doesn't define him. Do you understand? Everything we read before this defines him as a good man. And before you say, yeah, but he's still, well, shut your mouth. He got leprosy. Is that not enough? I was talking to a guy one time. He started badmouthing the guy. I said, well, he's dead. Well, what are we going to do? Like the Catholics in Wycliffe, dig his bones up and burn him? Like, come on, man, he's dead. Isn't that enough for you? And we, look, you know what happens? I'm going to tell you what happened years ago. I was in a church. This guy went to a tough, tough area. I would tell you that it was always cold, except that it's south of here. And it was a very tough steel city. This guy, he eked out this little church. He meeting in a storefront. They're looking at a building. And I was there having a meeting with him. And don't ask me what happened, but one time somebody said something to him. They're going to hang a picture, and it became a church project. Just going to hang a picture. I didn't know what the picture was. It was probably something about how much they love the Lord. And you know what this pastor did? He got so mad. I can still remember. He took this picture. It's a big picture. And he's yelling. He yells and he slams this thing, shatters the frame, breaks the glass. You know, that one act defined him. He wasn't a good man anymore. It doesn't matter how hard he worked to build a church. It doesn't matter what he did for anybody in the church. That one act defined him. If somebody came up to your pastor, and your pastor is a good man, and that is not a joke, he is a good man. And if somebody came up to your pastor on a day when he just had maybe just gotten off the phone with somebody who's had a loved one die, just found out something else about somebody in church that you're never going to hear about, just has another problem, maybe not feeling good, and somebody walks up and goes, you know, Pastor, we need to pave this parking lot. I mean, the cars are getting dirty. I'm just taking. And if he just went off and said, why don't you go pave it yourself? I'm not doing it. Why don't you just shut your mouth? Why don't you get your own church and run it one time? If your pastor did that, look at all this, and you would define him by that one thing. You would define him by that one. You say, was he right? No, he's not right. No more than Uzziah was right. But Uzziah was not evil and he was not wicked. The God that inspired this book said about him, he did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. Isn't that what it said? And all I'm telling you is that this was one of the last great kings of Judah. And then you get to this. Verse 23. So Uzziah slept with his fathers. He died. You know what that is, verse 23? That's Isaiah 6:1. Right? So here's Isaiah. Let's say he's about 20 years old. I'm not trying to make him 20. I'm trying to give him 62 years to grow, okay? So I'm starting him out at the earliest age, 20, maybe 24, maybe 25. All he's known is a great king. All he has known as the reestablishment, all he has ever seen all of his life is the reestablishment of the greatness of Israel. And I don't care what Uzziah did in that temple when he died, it was a national tragedy. It was like Reagan in our country dying years after him being president. He was one of the greatest men our country ever produced, and it was a national tragedy. Now go back to Isaiah chapter 6. Now what would you think? What would you think? You know, 20-year-old guys, that 18, 19, you know why armies are made out of 18-year-old kids? They'll kill anything. 18-year-old kids will climb through a window and kill you. They'll just have fun killing you. I have a preacher friend, and he had a son. He was in the Marine Corps, and and he wrote back to me. He was in Iraq or Afghanistan, and he says, Dad, he said, I don't even have a tent. He said, I'm sleeping out on, he said, it's hot, it's horribly hot during the day, it's freezing cold at night, I don't even have a tent, I just have a sleeping bag, I'm sleeping out under the stars, they're trying to kill me here. I love it. You say, now if you ladies go, oh, that's awful, that's why you don't belong in that sleeping bag. You just bake the cookies, honey. Kiss him when he gets off the boat. You say, well, why would it? Because that's what an 18-year-old wants to do. But they tend to be a little reactionary. You know that age, a little bit reactionary? I remember I was teaching in a Bible college. I came into one of my classes, and there was two guys about 20 years old. They walked up to me and said, have you heard? I said, no. I said, have you heard about Pepsi? I said, apparently not. I said, well, this was back in 1980 or something. He said, well, here's what happened. At that time, of course, Soviet Union is still running hot. And some vodka company in Russia had just made a deal with Pepsi-Cola in this country, and they're going to sell Pepsi in Russia, and Pepsi is going to sell this vodka in the United States. And Pepsi had put out an ad that they were going to see to it they put a bottle of this Russian vodka on every dinner table in America. I said, I want to go home and see if mine's there. No. And so these guys were there. They were like, oh, did you hear about Pepsi? They think they're going to put Russian vodka on every dinner table in America. What do you think of that? I said, oh, here's what they said. They said, and we're not going to drink Pepsi anymore. I said, are you going to drink vodka? It's going to be on your table. Well, what do you think? I said, well, they're not going to put a bottle of Russian vodka on my dinner table. And they went, okay, here's what the guy said. Oh. I said, are they going to put one on yours? No. I said, well, that's two of us. But this guy was just off on some stupid thing that pecked, and it never happened. It never happened. But you ever notice that age? Sorry, guys. And I'm not putting it down. I'm not putting it down because those guys are just ready. They will attack everybody. Listen, here's what you never want to do. You never want to give a 20-year-old a shortwave radio. When they find out what's out on shortwave, you know, those vapor trails from those planes are chemicals. And they're killing us. And there's bugs in the water. And they're putting little robots in our blood and they're eating our brains. Where'd you hear that? I listened to shortwave. Please stop. Give the kid some Ritalin. here's our problem. I'll bet you every time you read the book of Isaiah, you've got this wizened man of God in your mind, right? You probably have an age for Isaiah, somewhere around 50 or 60 or 55, somewhere like that. And all through this book, that's what you see, but that's not what he is here. So here he is. All he's known his whole life is greatness in Judah, a great king. He was probably brokenhearted when Uzziah did that with the temple. Probably still loved him anyway. And when he died, and now his book begins with five chapters on what God's going to do to Israel. And now this great king died. What would you think? Well, it's over now. Great days are gone. Boy, I lived in the wrong time period. I wish I could have been about the age of Uzziah and I could have lived his entire life and I could have saw everything he did. Boy, I wish I'd have been alive when David was around or Solomon, but no, I have to be here to shovel the dirt in on the dead body of Judah. And watch what happens. With the death of Uzziah in the life of Isaiah, there is an almost, if I can use the word magical, but it's actually miraculous transformation in Isaiah, in his ministry, in his life, and in the entire rest of this book. Look what happens. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims, each one had six wings, with twain he covered his face, with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. Now, I tell you guys this, and you're going to laugh because you think it's funny and you think I'm making a joke, I'm very serious, but I am a little warped. I say that like you didn't know, I'm not as bad as you think, but I'm a little warped. I'll tell you how I discovered it. I discovered it in that whenever people look at something, they all look at it from this angle, and for some reason, I always look at it from a different angle. That's where I've always looked at it. I remember one time, my wife and I were walking through this little fair. We wanted to buy corn on a cob. We went to this place to get corn on a cob, and the guy says, oh man, I'm sorry, we're out of it. I went, praise the Lord. He goes, why'd you say that? I said, well, man, you're selling corn on a cob. If you're out of it, that means you sold everything you got. You've had a good day. The guy's going, yeah. And I was 23, you know, that age. It's okay, we'll just go kill a squirrel. And so now look at this verse again. They got six wings. With twain he covered his face. And with twain he covered his feet. And with twain he did fly. And you guys don't get it. All right. Will you envision it? Here they are with six wings. What's he do with two of them? What's he do with the other two? What's he do with the other two? With his face covered. I've often seen this. Well, get your wings off your face, you idiot. You know where you were going. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried. And the house was filled with smoke. Now, again, you know what your problem is? What your problem is really, I kind of call Isaiah the book of the revelations. Because everything after chapter 6 is a revelation of something. What you are missing when we read this is that you are seeing the greatest revelation of heaven in the Old Testament. You won't find a view of heaven anywhere. I said, well, what about Revelation's New Testament? Does this not go with Revelation chapter 4? Right with it. But what's just happened, when King Uzziah died, a national tragedy, end of the line, five chapters of death and wailing, and it's all over, and suddenly the door is open, and Isaiah looks up into heaven. And he is never the same again. Verse 5. And I said, woe is me! For I'm undone, because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Now take a look at something. Look at verse 6. And try thinking. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand. All right? What's he got in his hand? Like a charcoal briquette. You're gonna do grilling, you know, and it's white, how it turns white when it's really hot. It's in his hand. Does it hurt him? Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. Is this going to burn him? Is it going to burn him? Why do you need the tongs? You need the tongs, right? I want to see you do that. Doesn't bother me at all. I was reading a book by an idiot. G. Gordon Liddy is a mouth-breathing idiot. G. Gordon Liddy was one of the guys that helped get Nixon kicked out of office because he broke into Democratic headquarters. And G. Gordon Liddy was so obsessed with his own manhood, he's dating this woman. He takes her out to a restaurant one time, you know, candlelight. And he said, and I wanted her to know what kind of a man I was, so I stuck my hand in the candle and held it there. He's telling how the skin on his hand is beginning to smoke and stink. And he wants her to see. And he says, I can't understand why she said, could you take me home? Sick man, pal. Now, wait a minute. If it's not going to burn him, why did he need tongs to pick it up? Well, then it obviously wasn't because it might burn him picking it up. Where did he pick it up off of? He had the tongs not to protect him from the coal, but to protect the altar from him. That seraphim wasn't even allowed to touch that altar. He had to use tongs. And they picked it up and put it in his hand. Verse 7. I told you I'm warped. Read verse 7. And he laid it upon my mouth. What did he lay upon his mouth? Yeah. And you know what? You read that and go right on to verse 8. And he laid it upon my mouth. Oh, come on. Hey, Isaiah, kiss this. Oh, what would you do? Come on. I always like the verse in the Bible where it says, they shoot out their lips and shake their heads. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, lo, this hath touched thy lips. I don't think Isaiah needed to be told that. I want you to do that. Go in there, walk up to somebody with a hot cold, say, this touched you. I mean, if you got one active nerve ending in your body, it is going to be screaming at the top of its lungs. Lo, this hath touched thy lips. Oh, thank you. And thy iniquity is taken away and thy sin purged. Watch this. Also, I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. After a national tragedy, when he saw his country in a hopeless situation and its hope just died and was buried, he got a glimpse of heaven that no man had ever. Do you understand this has never been seen before? See, we read this. You know what's wrong with us? We have a book of the miraculous, so we read the miraculous like it's not miraculous. We read about somebody rising from the dead and go right on to the next verse. And I told you, if you'd get out of your chair and if you would just stand along the road as the funeral is happening, and all of a sudden you go, oh no, what's that nutcase Jesus coming out? And the poor lady is crying because her daughter's dead. And why is he coming in? And what is, and whoa, look at that. It might be to you miraculous. This is a revelation of heaven that no human has ever glimpsed, and it happened after a national tragedy when there was no hope and all judgment was proclaimed against Israel. After this, you have the anointing of Isaiah. Here am I, send me. Those words changed him forever. They changed. Listen, he is never again. 20 years old, 21 years old. He's about 22, according to my Bible. We're now about 758. So this may have taken place when if he started this book at 20, he might be around 22 or shortly thereafter. But this guy said, here am I, send me. You know what I equate that? I might have said this to you, but I equate that prayer, those words from the mouth of a Christian, I equate that to getting in a roller coaster and pulling that bar down. You know, you get in a roller coaster and you're reconsidering while everybody's getting on. They're still packing it up and you're going, man, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I, well, I could, yeah, I could, well, I don't know. I don't think I'm good. You know, I could always get, and all of a sudden the bar goes click. And I got news for you, bucko. The issue is settled. You are headed up the hill. I love roller coasters. I can't ride them anymore. They make a turn left. My head makes a turn right. It's all over. Our 15th anniversary, went to this park, and they had the fastest roller coaster in the world at that time, 52 miles an hour. And I wanted to ride it. I wanted to ride it the worst way, but I can't ride it. I couldn't ride it because of my neck. So I can't even do that now, but at that time, I could ride those rubber-tired ones that do the curly cues because they don't jar you so bad. So we get in the line because we're watching this rubber-tired one, you know, and we're in the line. We get in, and when it pulls in, I thought, man, that looks just like an old wooden roller coaster. Doesn't look like one of those rubber tire things. So I get in. I'm going, man, you know, this really looks like just a regular old wooden roller coaster. This doesn't look like what I think we're in line for. And as I was considering, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe I shouldn't be click. You know, whoever designed roller coasters is a sadist. Did you ever notice it takes 3 hours and 45 minutes to get up the first hill? You come out of there and you start there. As we're going up the hill, I said, hey, Kathy, look over there. She said, what's that? I said, that's what we thought we were in line for. We were on the world's fastest roller coaster, 52 miles an hour. You say, were you worried? Not now. Bar's down. I didn't worry about it at all. Had I known I was getting on it, I probably wouldn't have gotten on it. Once the bar's down, I'm on it. What am I supposed to say? I went, uh-huh. Oh, man, I figure in 2.5 minutes, it's going to be over in more ways than one. It took me 3 months to get over that ride. My neck was messed up for 3 months. But what a rush. I mean, I can see that thing going 52 miles an hour. It had a three-deck circle, and it's just wanting to jump off the tracks. And I'm going, yeah. They got one that goes 100 now. I'm trying to find out how to get on that by accident. You know something, guys? You know what your problem is? Your problem is you want to figure it out. I hate this term. And do you have any safety nets? You know, you have these plans. Do you have any fallback position? Who needs a fallback position? You got God, don't you? You know what you guys need to do? You just need to sit down and say, Lord, here am I. Click, send me. When Isaiah did that, his life was changed for the rest of his life. He's about 22 years old. This kid is never going to be the same ever again. And he is about to see and say and reveal things that that mankind has never delved into. He's not just ripping on Israel for five chapters like a 20-year-old street preacher. Are y'all going to hell? You hate God, you fornicators! And all of a sudden, he says, here am I, send me. You know what happened? He just saw heaven, didn't he? And he said, I went in on this. I went in on this. You send me. Listen to what happens immediately after that. Chapter 7, look at verse 14. Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel. After this come the great messianic prophecies of Isaiah. That is one of the single greatest Old Testament prophecies on the birth of Jesus Christ, on the birth of Israel's Messiah. Look at chapter 9, verse 6. Ever see this one? For unto us a child is born, for unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. That happened after his national tragedy, when he thought his nation was going down the slammers, when he thought it was all over. And oh man, what are we going to do now? And all he said was, here am I, send me. And he saw what no man other saw. You know what? Did you notice chapter 7, verse 14? You know what we got introduced to for the first time? The name Emmanuel. What's Emmanuel mean? God with us. Man, that's what I think we're going to call him in eternity. You read Revelation. When he sits on that throne in the New Jerusalem, you read Revelation chapter... Read this. I'm going to say it's chapter 21. Read about the first four verses and see how many times the phrase God with them appears. It appears three times. And their God shall be with them. And God is with them. You read Zechariah chapter 8, verse 23. It says, at that time, 10 men from 10 different nations will take a hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew and said, we heard you're going to Jerusalem. Can we go up with you? Because we've heard that God is with you. That's Emmanuel. But that's the first time we ever heard it. We heard it after this national tragedy, when it was all over, when we may as well just lay down and die and give up because they got it. In chapter 10, verse 20 through 27, I'm not going to read it. But you know what he hears? See if I can just get you a little bit of this. Look at verse 20. And it shall come to pass, is that future? In that day that the remnant of Israel and such as are escaped of the house of Judah shall no more again stay upon him that smote them, but shall stay upon the Lord, the Holy One of Israel in truth. Whoa, you know what Isaiah just heard? This is a kid. This is a kid that thinks his country is done for, that his greatest leader has just died, that his life is effectively over. I mean, I've been just preaching 2 years, and this guy dies, and it's all over. You know what God just told him? Hey, pal, Israel's going to come back. How's that for a revelation? A revelation that Israel would be restored. To this day, we believe that. Isn't that true? In chapter 11, verses 6 through 10, you know what you get? You get a revelation of what the kingdom is going to be like. In chapter 11, verses 11 through 16, you have a revelation of Israel's ultimate triumph. And look who gets the glory. Here's a good chapter. We'll read a whole chapter. Have you read a chapter of the Bible today? You ladies get another bottle of water on this. Chapter 12, verse 1, in those days thou shalt say, O Lord, I will praise thee. Though thou wast angry with me, thine anger is turned away, and thou comfortest me. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. For the Lord Jehovah is my strength and my song. He also has become my salvation. Therefore, with joy shall you draw water out of the wells of salvation. And in that day shall you say, praise the Lord, call upon his name, declare his doings among the people, make mention that his name is exalted. Sing unto the Lord, for he hath done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. Cry out and shout, thou inhabitants of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee. That whole chapter. Look who gets the credit. God does. God is getting worshiped. Guys, I'll tell you, nothing flips my switch like seeing God getting worshiped. I like songs about the blood. I like songs about my sins being forgiven. I like songs about my future in heaven. Sometimes I like a song that doesn't even mention me. Sometimes I just like one that says, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. I mean, I just like to hear something where He's in there. You understand He's not great just because He sent His Son to die for your sins? That is not what made Him great. He was great before that, and if He wouldn't have done it, He'd still be great. If you were on your way to hell right now, He'd still be worthy of every worship, all the worship you could give Him, and you ought to worship Him right to the gates of hell. And the last thing when He says you're going to hell, the last thing you ought to say is amen and go in. He is the great God, and he gets all the credit. I like that. Hey, in chapter 13, in verse 9, you know what it tells about? It tells about the end of Babylon. That's called Iraq. I know how it's going to turn out. They're going to get zapped. The destiny of Iraq is found in Isaiah 13:19. The destiny of Israel, chapter 14, verses 1 through 18. You see the kingdom coming and Israel's on a roll. Do you understand what a revelation this must have been for Isaiah himself? In his mindset, it's over. Oh yeah. You know, he's probably just a little bit Baptist. Doing what we do so well. Nothing and griping. Oh yeah, you know, they got this, they got the schools, and oh yeah, did you hear what they did now? You know, in the United States, one motel took all of the Bibles out and put Korans in. And of course, that makes the news media very happy, so they report that like it happened all over the country. And you ought to hear the American, oh yeah, and you hear they're putting Korans in the motels. One did, in one town, in one motel. The news media is going to make it look like it was some kind of a national policy. And we do what we do best. Oh, it's over. Yeah, they got the motels now. I mean, I knew they had everything else. We just take the gas pipe. You want to see something? Look at this. You never saw this. This has never been revealed. You got to remember, as you read through the book of Isaiah, you are reading things the first time anybody ever found out. You know what everybody found out in Isaiah chapter 14? What happened to Lucifer? Look at verse 12. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Five times he said, I will. And if you will compare this to Ezekiel chapter 28, you know what you'll find? Five times God said, I will. And if you want to bet on an I will bet on God's I will. Verse 15. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look unto thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, and opened not the house of his prisoners? Yeah, that's the one. But that is the revelation of what happened to Lucifer, and that's what we got when this kid thought it was all over. When he just experienced something that probably broke his heart. When Ronald Reagan was president, they attempted to kill him. And he walked out of some kind of a meeting, and this guy walked up and bang, 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 and he hit a guard and he hit a cop and he hit Reagan. Didn't know it, but he hit Reagan. And that morning, we had to wake up our boys and tell them that our president had been shot. And I asked my wife, what was Nathan, wasn't it? Is John, our son John, who was at that time, he'd have been the only one that knew it, 4 years old. He was it. We told him that President Reagan had been shot. I'm telling you, he was smitten. This great man, we thought our president was going to die. Finest president we'd ever had. We thought he was going to die. And that little 4-year old, it was like that bullet had hit him in the heart. And that's what happened when Uzziah died. Here's this impressionable young prophet. Who just wrote 5 chapters of the destruction of Israel, the coming destruction of Israel. Come on. He knows how the book's going to end, doesn't he? He can see it. He can see there's no life ahead of him. Man, why couldn't I have been in those days when those kings were really something? I saw the end of Israel. Boy, wouldn't you like to be here to turn out the light switch on Canada? Wouldn't you like, and don't you just love the idea that you're going to be here to see it all fold up? They sweep it up under the rug, the ashes of Canada. It's all over, guys. I mean, you know, the devil's got it. Why should we even resist? Look what you see. Chapter 14. starting with chapter 14, verse 18, all the way to chapter 23, 18. You know what you've got? You've got the destiny of Israel's historic enemies. You say, who are they? Pick a country. I mean, just pick a country. You can call it Iraq. You can call it Babylon. You can call it Chaldea. You can call it Persia. You can call it Rome. You can call them Jordan. You can call it Egypt. You can call it Libya. I mean, I don't care. Just name one, man. They're all, and they have been hammered on Israel and hammered on Israel. And you start with chapter 14. Listen, after the leader goes, his army goes. And the leader went down in chapter 14. And after Lucifer fell, I mean, those countries go down like dominoes. And you're reading. Can you imagine what that must have done for Isaiah? I mean, he's going, whoa, I like this. Could make a good movie. Whatever that is. Look at chapter 38. You know what this kid, if you would have told this young kid, who, by the way, has now passed 50 of those years. It's now 710. You know what he saw in his lifetime? Isaiah lived through the greatest single miracle of all time. The sun going backwards 10 degrees. Again, you go, oh, well, the sun went back. Oh, yeah, that's right. Did it yesterday too, right? And last week. I mean, come on. Here it is, Hezekiah is going to die. Look at chapter 38 and verse 8. Behold, I will bring again the shadow of the degrees, which has gone down in the sundial of Ahaz 10 degrees backwards. So the sun returned 10 degrees, by which degrees it was gone down. And you read that like you read a classified ad for somebody selling a dog. You read that like, oh yeah. And you know what they say? They say that NASA went back and they found that 10-degree error with their supercomputers. Now somebody just said, oh, but I heard that report isn't true. Well, of course you heard that report isn't true. You also heard the report of the worldwide flood isn't true. Have you heard the report that creation wasn't true, that we all came out of a mud puddle? I've heard that report isn't true either. So what are you doing? Are you willingly opening your heart and your head and everything about you to every cheap piece of propaganda from the people that hate you and hate your country and hate your God? If I thought it wasn't true, I'd spread it anyway just because I know. I told you, man, if you can't find something that would make God happy, find something that upset the devil. Look at chapter 40, verse 1. We get the revelation of the future comforting of Israel. Comfort. Comfort ye, my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem and cry unto her that her warfare, look at this, is accomplished and that her iniquity is pardoned. For she hath received the Lord's hand double for all her sins. Hey, you know what God said? God said it's all over. Look what it says, verse 3. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. My goodness, Isaiah wrote that. Isaiah wrote that. This is like 50 years after he thought it was all over. You know, Brother Jones, how many years you've been preaching? 40 years. And I think, you know, after you've been preaching about 40 years, you know what you start thinking? Is there anything new under the sun? Okay, how about the sun going backwards 10 degrees? Oh yeah, it'd be new. How about finding out that Israel's going to be comforted, that God is going to forgive her and reestablish her? Can you imagine what this must have been like for Isaiah? You talk about a rush. You talk about helping your mental attitude, feeling good about yourself. You know what comes after this? I love it. I love this. Look at chapter 42. and starting with chapter 42. And this is, hey, let me give you something free. Look at chapter 41. Just, you might want to mark this one down just because it's a good verse. Chapter 41, verse 10. Fear ye not, for I am I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. That's got nothing to do with my message. Just somebody probably needed that. Look at chapter 42. Look at verse 8. And you know what? You know what begins with verse 8? The great Isaiah, I am the Lord passages. Oh, you have got to picture God saying this. This is not like I said, the Jesus of the girl hands. You know, I am the Lord. You know what I see? I see the Lord walking tall. I see the Lord with his chest puffed out saying, I am the Lord, like anybody want to say I'm not? I am the Lord. Could you imagine? Come on, guys, how'd you feel if some guy walked in here, got up here and walked back and said, I'm the only man in this place. I don't see any men in this room. There are no men here. I'm the only man. Now, I'll guarantee you somebody get up, and he get up in there and goes, bunk, and he's out. And somebody goes, yeah, he's the only man. Look what it says, chapter 8, chapter 42, verse 8. I am the Lord. That is my name. Look at this. And my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Look at chapter 43, verse 11. I am the Lord. Beside me, there is no Savior. 15. I am the Lord, your Holy One, the Creator of Israel, your King. Look at chapter 44. I love this. This is God sporting for a fight. Ooh, could you imagine God in a fighting mood? Could you imagine God with a chip on his shoulder wanting to push somebody? Say, who would he push? Not you. Not you. Come on, man. You're a dirt ball. You're a piece of clay. Is whipping you mean anything to him? No. You know who he's after? You know who soldiers want to fight? They want to fight the enemy's best soldier. They want to prove they're the best. You know who God goes sporting for when he was pushing somebody around? The other gods. He just goes around and says, oh, you're a god? What do you think? What are you going to do about it? Look what he says, verse 6. Thus saith the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts. I am the first, and I am the last, and beside me there is no God. And who, as I, shall call and shall declare it, and set it in order for me, since I appointed the ancient people and the things that are coming and shall come, let them show unto them. Verse 8, fear ye not, neither be afraid. Have not I told you this, from that time and have declared it? Ye are even my witnesses. Is there a God beside me? Yea, there is no God. I know not any. Whoa, man. Now, I'm not bothered by that verse. You know why I'm not bothered by the verse? Because I've never claimed to be a God. I have never claimed to be a God. If a guy walked in here and said, I am God, well, we'd pitch him. Wouldn't we? Come on. I mean, we'd pitch the guy. We'd know he's not. He's just a nutcase. If a guy came in here and said, I'm the only man here, you know what I'd say? I'd say, okay, Penner, get up there and show him. Well, I'd take that personal. Hey, if a guy walked in here and said, What would these guys do if I said, hey, you know what? I'm the only preacher in this room. There'd be a few guys be offended by that statement. But there'd be a bunch of you wouldn't. Why? Because, yeah, you're not a preacher. I'm not bothered God said, I don't know another God. It doesn't bother me because I never claimed to be a God. Boo, but if you were one, if you were somebody around saying, oh, my name is Allah. I am Allah. Oh, you worship me. And God said, I don't even know another God. You're no God. And Allah goes, chapter 45, verse 5. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, thou hast not known me. That all came to this kid. He's not a kid now. But this came to him. All started back there after King Uzziah died. And he got a vision of heaven. And he said, I went in on this. You count me. I'll do this. You know what this guy got? Go over to chapter 53, guys. I'm not going to read it, but look at that chapter. You know what that chapter is. Is that not one of the most amazing Old Testament chapters in the Bible? Isaiah got that. Look at chapter 61. How can you not enjoy this? We get to see Israel comforted. You know who gets comforted in Isaiah chapter 61? You and me. Look at verse 1. I know this is me. I'll show you how. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. That's not why I'm in there. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted. I'll take that one. To proclaim liberty to the captives. That's me. And the opening of the prison to them that are bound. That one is me. To proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes and the oil of joy for mourning and the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that He might be glorified. That He might be glorified. Brother Jones said it. All this new gospel is all about how to make you feel good about yourself and come and get Jesus and your car will get better mileage and, you know, you won't get audited by the IRS. Your mother-in-law will never move in. You know, nothing bad will ever happen. And it's all a horizontal gospel, guys. And he said, I'm going to do all this for you so that He gets glorified. He's supposed to be getting the glory. I want the glory. Shut up and be glad to get the comfort. I'm glad to get the comfort. I'm glad to get out of the prison. I'm glad to have the broken heart taken care of. And then look at this. Go to chapter 65. All right, we're just about done with the introduction. I'm serious. Isaiah chapter 65. You know what you know the revelation we get here? We get two revelations. We get a revelation for the first time something appears that's never appeared before. He coins a phrase. Something that he said that you don't even think of Isaiah when you hear it. You always think of Revelation and you say it like it's something that you hear every day. Verse 17. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth. And you see, you read that and you go, oh yeah, I know what that is. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What do you think Isaiah thought when God said, I'm going to make a new heaven, new earth? You don't understand if Isaiah said, hey, you know God's going to make a new heaven and a new earth? Everybody go, a what? What do you mean a new heaven and a new earth? It was a totally foreign concept. And this guy got that revelation. Look what else he got in that verse. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. I am sorry. I am sorry for every one of you who's got somebody already in a grave, already in hell. My older brother died in a motorcycle accident in 1975. Never got saved, went to hell. He's in hell right now, been there all those years. The Bible tells me that we're going to see it in a moment. We're going to go to the brink of hell, the lake of fire, and look in and see the damned. You say, well, what are you going to do when you see your brother? I'm not going to remember him. Oh, that's awful. Oh, no. No, what would be awful is looking in there and knowing who he is. It's awful for him. But all of the grief of this land of grief is going to be wiped away. And I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but we think that the worst thing that can happen to the damned is they'll burn forever. How about burning forever and nobody even remembering who they were? When nobody remembers who you were, it was as though you never existed, as though you have always existed in that fire. We got that from Isaiah. Look at chapter 66. And watch how God packs the last three verses. I mean, packs. Three verses. He's closing the book out, and the last three verses are literally jam-packed with stuff. 22. For as the new heavens and new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name be. There it is. That is another reference to that new heaven, new earth. And then you know what you see in verse 23? The eternal worship of God. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. Man, don't you long for that day? Don't you long for the day when all flesh comes by and goes to the throne and worships Him? You say, what if nobody does? Last verse. And they shall go forth after worshiping the Lord. Here's what we're going to do. You're in that verse. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me, for their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. And Isaiah, at least 82 years old, puts a period, and he's done. He thought he was done 60-some years earlier. He thought the book of Isaiah was going to end somewhere around chapter 5. He thought the life of Isaiah was going to end somewhere around age 21. And look, when after a great national tragedy, when it was all on the ropes, but he got a glimpse of heaven, and he said, I went in on that. I'm going to give you an illustration. I'll be done. This Yeah, I know you can't see it too well, but that is a B-17. That is probably, without a doubt, the most famous World War II bomber of all time. It actually wasn't the one that was built the most. The B-24, they built more of them. But that is the B-17. It was known as the Flying Fortress. They built 12,731. During World War II, we had 12,000 just of those. Not counting B-25s, B-24s, B-26s. There was over 12,000 B-24s. We had, in our Air Force, we had somewhere around 30 or 40,000 just bombers. Today, the United States Air Force has less than 200 bombers. It has less. But here's what I want you to, now, try to keep a figure, and I'll bring this number back to you. The development began on the B-17, in 1934. You know that the war began in 1940 in Europe, and the United States got involved in 41, the end of 41. But this plane began its development in 1934. It flew for the first time in 1935, the very next year. It was ordered to be built and accepted by the Army Air Force, in 1936. It became operational with our Air Force in 1939, 2 years before we got involved in the war. So the B-17 became operational in 1939. Keep that figure. That's the number I want you to remember, 1939. I want you to remember that year. The B-17 was a tremendous aircraft. It was beloved by the guys that flew it. I've seen pictures of these things. One, I saw a picture where a German airplane literally flew right into the side of a B-17. There was the impression of the fuselage and its wings, and the plane kept flying. And the guys landed, and when it landed, it said when it came to a stop, it just folded where it had been hit. Like, okay, I got them home safe now. Guys have got stories of B-17s flying in on one engine, having parts of them blown off, holes in their wings. This was called a flying fortress because it had two 50 caliber machine guns shooting out the back, two from a chin turret, two from that ball turret, another two from here, one from each waist gun, and two from the bottom. I mean, this thing could put out some firepower. I talked to a guy that was a waist gunner in World War II. You ever hear, you know how they used to try to fly in a tight formation? I said, how tight did you guys fly? He said, you knew you were flying tight when I'm, now this guy, this is an open window, okay? He's got a 50 caliber machine gun that isn't even mounted. They don't even mount it until they get over German territory. But he said, we knew we were flying close when I could lean out and touch the wingtip of the next plane. That is how close they're flying, just like that. The B-17 it bombed Europe. It was used mostly in Europe and devastated Europe. I got a friend of mine, Brother Pete will appreciate this. I got a friend of mine was born and raised in Austria, and after World War II, they came over to this country. And there was going to be an air show. There were, I told you, 12,731 of these. There are 10 flying B-17s left. There are several museum pieces that can't turn over the engine, but there are 10 of them that still fly. And there was a, they were having an air show in his city, and they were having a fly, one of the last remaining flying B-17s. And he went to his dad, who was raised in Austria, you know, during the war. And he said, "Hey, Dad, you want to go to the air show and see a B-17? And his dad said, "No, son, I saw enough of them from the bottom during the war." He didn't know what it looked like from there. I mean, if you'd have said, "Look, Dad, that's a B-17. He said, "I don't know." He put him on a creeper. And he went, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that." That is the B-29. The B-17, because of its armor, was called the Flying Fortress. This replaced it. It was called the Super Fortress. B-17 carried 5,000 pounds. This one would carry 20,000 pounds. Four times the bomb load. Where there were 12,731 B-17s, they only built 3,960 of these. But when you're carrying four times a bomb load, but it wasn't rack after rack after rack of B-29s, the super fortress that made it famous, is it? You know what that one's famous for? That's the one that ended the war. That's the one that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and the atomic bomb on Nagasaki. For everything the B-17 did, it couldn't end the war. That one did. Listen to this. Development began in 1938. First flight, 1942. It was ordered into production, 1943. Operational, 1944. Development began in 1938. What number did I tell you to remember about the B-17? 1939. Do you understand what you just heard? Before the B-17 entered operational status in 1939, they were already working on its replacement. That is astounding. That is foresight, is it not? Can you imagine you're talking about this great bomber that you're going to build, the B-17, carry 5,000 pounds of bombs, nobody else could, nothing else ever did that, pressurized up in the front, blah, 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 tell all this stuff, flying fortress, all these guns. And while you're talking about building this, you're already working on its replacement. And the replacement is the one that got the job done. And everybody said, "Oh, we love the B-17, we hate to see it go." But when it went, look what replaced it. Now I'm talking to you guys. You guys, 20 to 30. God has enough, right now, He has enough B-17s. He's got enough B-17s. You've seen the guns blazing, have you not? You've heard the bombs exploding. You know what we need? We need the replacement for the B-17s to start getting developed now. Because one of these days, the B-17 is going to go. And when the B-17 goes, their flat better be a B-29 to take its place. Do you understand? So what should I do? Why don't you try this? Here am I. Send me. You young ladies, you know what these young guys need? They need you to be virtuous. They don't desire that. I said they need that. They need you to be pure. They need you to encourage them. Oh, man, listen, a girl saying, "You're my hero," the guy will literally, he will take on 50 guys. It doesn't matter. He'll just go to his death. "Oh, did you hear what she said about me?" And he'll just, you know, "I can stop this bus." You ladies, you young girls, you need to encourage them. You need to encourage these young guys to stand for Canada and to stand for Christ. Now, I know what some of you think. "Oh, yeah, preacher, but you know, come on. Now, that's a good sermon, but you know, this is the end time and it's over." That's what Isaiah thought in chapter 5. Had he any idea that he had 62 years ahead of him? And that he was going to see things happen that nobody ever saw. He was going to write things that have absolutely dazzled the world to this day. You guys, you need to study. You need to plan. You need to focus your attention. I'm sorry, guys, but there's more to life than hockey and soccer and football and lettering and being some kind of a sports figure or a movie star. You know, the worst thing that's happened to television was reality TV, because that's when everybody now watched it thinking, I could be on this next week. And everybody thinks next week they're going to be a movie star. You know what you need? Look, maybe your country's in bad shape. Mine's in bad shape. Maybe we in my country are about to have a national tragedy. Maybe the next election will be a national tragedy to the United States of America. You say, what'll happen? Well, I don't know. But when that national tragedy happened, it was the beginning of a roller coaster ride for Isaiah like he never saw before. In a moment, I'm going to give an invitation. Before I do, I'm going to give to the invitation. Everybody carries mad money. I carry some mad money. I always think people ought to put their money where their mouth is, don't you? All right? Now you guys understand, I told you this before, and don't take this in any way as an insult. Don't take this, don't be upset with me. Canada is not my burden. I don't love Canada like I love the United States. But that's the way it should be. But that doesn't mean Canada's not a good country. I think Canada is a great country. I think the Canadians are great people. I love you guys. That pin that he has on his lapel, you guys gave me one. It's on a suit at home. I keep it on that suit. Pray for you guys every time I wear it. I never wear it, but to somebody doesn't go, hey, that's a wrong flag. And I take the guff for you. Now, don't be upset, because if one of your guys came around with the stars and stripes, you go, hey, wrong flag. And that's the way it should be. So I don't love Canada like I love the United States, but I do have a burden for your country. That's why I come to this meeting. When I got called to evangelism, I got called to the 48 states of the United States, not even Hawaii and Alaska. I told God, I'll just spend my life in the 48 states. I don't have to go out to the other country. And here I am. I come here and go some other places. But I'm going to tell you what I am. I am with you in your fight and your desire to see God have a spiritual movement and victory in your country. And I think 20 to 30 is the crowd that's going to do it. Now, I'm going to give this is $200. I hope this does it. The pastor, you can have this. I'll tell you what this is for. Yes. That's not an exit. That is for everybody in this church. Now, I can't do this for every place around Canada. You know, you guys got going to camp next week. But sometime after you guys get back from camp, I want you to take that money and buy pizza and Coke and meet here or wherever and not have a pizza party. I said not have a pizza party. You're going to want to have something, so have pizza and Coke. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to talk about what you're going to do for Canada. Because you're not focused on Canada. We're all focused on the failure. We're all focused on the slide. But we don't sit around and think, what can I do to turn it around? Here's what I want you to envision. I want you to envision a fortress wall. And on the other side of that is the living, beating heart. I'm talking pumping heart of Canada. On the other side of that wall, there is Canada's heart. And it is surrounded. And you can hear the sound of the party. I mean, the heart of Canada. It's under the control of people that hate your country, that hate God, that hate righteousness, and they're manning the walls. Do you see your problem? You've got to find a way to get through there and get the heart of Canada. I don't have the answer. I don't know that you do. But until you envision it, and until you say, I'm going to find out how to get to the heart of Canada, because it's only going to take one Isaiah to make your country something it has never been before. I personally have invested hours, years, thousands and thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of written words just to do that for the United States. I can't do it for Canada. I'll do everything I can. But I want you guys to get together and look, don't be the honcho macho, is my plan or none. Quit being a Baptist, you idiot. Girls, I don't know what your dreams are. I don't know what your dreams are, but some of them you ought not to have. And if you're going to do anything for your God, if you're going to do anything for Canada, if you're going to do anything to help the B-29, you're going to have to say no to yourself on some things. And maybe you're just going to have to say, get together and say, how will I do my part for Canada? How will I do my part for Christ? And you might somewhere along the line sit down in a roller coaster that is operated by God Himself and say, here am I. Send me. And Canada has not yet seen what will happen when that roller coaster ride starts. But look at the book of Isaiah. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed.